hello there, Michelle.
Oh, hello there, Geordie. How are you?
Good, thank you. Welcome to Eavesdropping, everyone. This is the episode about relationships or something, or friendships. We don't know. It's a potluck.
It is a potluck because it was just so random, relationships. But then I thought, is that relationships with, like, what, parents, kids, who knows, like lovers? It's all relationships. But in the end, I don't really know what I'm going to talk about today.
Friends and lovers, what am I to do?
What is that song? I don't even know it.
I don't know. It just came into my head. Michelle, you're back. Back from outer space with that sad look upon your face. You've just had the most wonderful week, yet here you are looking glum.
Oh, honestly, it's because it's just, you know, when you wake up on the wrong side of the bed some mornings and things just go wrong.
Well, I did that today.
Well, we got home and I think it was me. I think I had forgotten to close the freezer door.
Oh.
So everything in the freezer was absolutely fucked.
Oh, Michelle.
Yeah. And then Andrea said,
so you walked into a flood on your floor.
Well, it was a flood and everything, all the food was ruined. And then it had refrozen and it was complete freezer full of ice that was coming out of the door because it obviously had been working overtime. And I said to Andreas, okay, we have to sort this out. He's like, he was a bit annoyed. He made me get the hairdryer, try and like defrost this freezer. Of course, that's not going to work.
Is this the minute you walked into your house?
Yes.
After being away for 3 weeks or 2 weeks?
Yes. And so it wasn't a good thing to come home to. Then
I'm sorry to laugh. That's awful.
No, it really is. Can you imagine if you walked home? Look, you walked into your house and all of Paddy's freezers were
It's happened. Fucked. It's happened to me before. It's happened. Not all of Paddy's, thank God. But yeah, that kind of thing does tend to happen. I've come home and pipes have burst in the middle of winter. So yeah.
Oh, God. So it's just not what you need when you walk in. And then I couldn't find stuff this morning. And, you know, I just thought, right, I have to really get zen. I have to remember my Abraham meditations and all this kind of stuff. And then I thought, hang on, we're recording this morning. What the fuck are we talking about? I've no idea. I just feel terrible that I've just bored everybody with a terribly boring story about a frozen, defrosted or unfrozen? Defrosted.
Freezer.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jason and I had this question of, are some things unfrozen? Are some things defrosted?
Defrosted every day, all day long.
Yeah. He said to me, I'm Swedish and my English is better than yours.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, come on. Anyway. Why? Because you're Australian and we've bastardized the English language, broccoli.
I think we've actually, broccoli. I think we have better Queen's English than the Brits. Controversial thing to say.
That but is controversial. I'm not sure I agree with that one.
Who says I was sat?
That I don't like that.
Not correct.
I don't not like correct. That. That really bothers me. I think I raised that with you, didn't I? Because I'd read it in one of your magazines. It was an interview with Robbie Williams. Not you didn't write it, but one of your colleagues did in Heat magazine. And it said I was sat next to Robbie Williams. And I asked a friend of mine whose mother is an English teacher, English teacher. She's British. Mm. And she said, yeah, it's wrong, but it's something that we've just used. But, you know, Australians do that all the time. They decide they take something out of the English language or the, you know, somebody says something wrong. This is my belief in Australia. Somebody mispronounces something or reads it and says what they see. And before you know it, it's caught on. And that's how it's said forevermore. Maroon being case in point. Maroon.
Maroon. We say maroon.
Yeah, but it's maroon. The word, how on earth did it ever become maroon?
Maroon. I don't know. Maroon.
How did that happen? If it's maroon, why isn't it balone? Happy birthday. Here, have this giant red balone. 99, a red balone. No, that doesn't work.
Maroon. I'd never really thought about maroon. But yes, it's an odd one, isn't it?
It's wrong.
But pool.
Pool.
Pool and cool.
Keeping cool in the pool. That's just an accent thing. That's not the wrong word. That's just an accent thing.
No, but could that also be maroon and maroon?
Maybe. And it's just been bastardized. Bastardized.
But do you say macarons or macaroon?
I say macaron because I'm an arsehole.
Yeah.
No, I'll say macaroons to certain people, but yeah, macaron when I'm at home alone, because I love to be a fancy pants.
Doris. Cloris. Maureen. Doreen. Leslie. Wesley. Tracy. And Stacy. Daniel.
Spaniel. Bill.
Dropping.
Yes, I woke up on the wrong side of the bed this morning, and things continue in that way. But actually, there's a whole mental shift you've got to get out of to get yourself out of those things. And I think people struggle with it. You know, even just this morning when I woke up and I was looking on Facebook, I would say every fifth post was from some kind of friend struggling with something, actually. I don't know about your Facebook feed, but I seem to have a lot of people who like to talk about the doom and gloom that they're going through at the moment. Do you have this on your feed?
I have seen it, but I don't look at Facebook very often. I get alerts, strangely, from different people, and then that prompts me to go and look. So, but when I do look and I see miserable things, that's probably the reason why I don't often go on there.
Yeah, I don't browse. I'm on Facebook because, I mean, I wake up and I just check the notifications and whatever, and then I scroll through. And I think the algorithm shows you things that you're looking at more. So if you look at someone's profile, they'll show you more of that. But the people who actually you would love to see alerts from or what they're up to, you don't get them. And this is obviously when they went from chronological algorithm into whatever crazy algorithm they've got. It's all based on they show you more of what you're looking at. It's kind of shit, but I don't know why, but there's this one particular guy. He was a friend that I met many, many years ago, and he often talks about bad relationships, the depression he's going through. I feel like more and more Facebook is becoming a platform for people to talk about their inner life.
Do you think it's because they're so lonely, or actual real connections have been replaced in this age of the internet? People don't feel the need to go out anymore because they can just sit in front of a screen and have their friendships that way. I mean,
well, I think obviously too, with lockdown, people haven't been able to go out and connect. So maybe it's worse. But I mean, and this is before lockdown, people talk about really, really personal things on a very public platform, and they talk about it and they contextualize it in a way of no one's talking about this, so I'm going to.
Right.
And I don't know, I feel like, should some things remain private, or is this people's way of reaching out and trying to have a connection and a relationship, even quite possibly with people they've met twice, like me, and I'm Facebook friends with this guy. I don't really know him, but I know very intimate details of his life, and oh my God, I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. But I know what you mean, because I have seen that on Facebook before, and I just think, oh, too much information. But then I do feel for that person. I think, oh, what's going on in your life that you feel that you need to advertise this? And then once they've said it and you've got your hundreds of comments underneath going, oh, mate, sorry, feel for you, or, you know, what's happening, or things like that. Just when you see something like that, if I see something like that and it's a close friend, I pick up the fucking phone.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And if it's a medium friend, but like a friend
then
I
look away. If it's a medium or an acquaintance, I look away. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm gawping then.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? It does feel a bit car crash. I mean, for example, this morning there was, and I took a screenshot of this because I thought there was no explanation. It was just this picture, and it was signs of emotional abuse. And it listed 15 signs, all handwritten in this kind of cutesy with colours and all sorts of thing. But it's quite full on. And underneath were all of these comments, yeah, it happened to me, that happened to me. And I don't know, it's just, I feel like some people are so broken and so damaged. It's very, very upsetting to see on Facebook. But, you know, when we talked about this episode and I was like, oh yeah, let's talk about relationships, in a way it's a relationships potluck, because there are so many different types of relationships. And it's such a hard world to navigate because relationships are everything, whether it's with your kids, with your parents, with your friends, with your colleagues. It's a minefield, and I don't think there's any correct way to navigate it. You know, even me talking to you about why do people feel the need to put this on Facebook, all of these signs of emotional abuse, it's obviously something within them that they are looking for a relationship. Doesn't matter who, it's whoever reads it, they need this at that moment.
Who posted the 15 signs of emotional abuse, and what are they, those signs?
A guy posted it. They're 5 columns.
Is that guy having a hard time?
I've been seeing his posts for 10 years.
And they've all shown signs. So, you know, even though you don't know him very well, you know that he's been in an emotionally abusive relationship.
Yeah, it's all Facebook. It's all Facebook. If I wasn't Facebook friends with this guy, I probably wouldn't even remember that I'd met him. Does that sound horrible?
That's fair.
Yeah, I screenshotted this because I thought it was really interesting. The signs of emotional abuse. Jealousy of your relationships with others. So a romantic relationship.
Yeah, so your partner wouldn't be happy if you had friends, other friends.
That's right. And then there's gaslighting. So rewriting events to convince you they happened a certain way. Blaming you for things in their life going wrong. Mm-hmm. No doesn't mean no. Humiliating and berating you. So this is all in one column. Then the second column is threatening to hurt themselves because of you. It's quite extreme.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Blaming you for their actions, shaming you into not talking about it. They love bomb you, then they mistreat you. Mm-hmm. Everything is one extreme or the other.
Yeah.
And then the final column, using guilt/compassion to control you. Your boundaries don't matter. Their needs mm-hmm. are the only ones that matter. Nothing you say or do is good enough. Constant, unfounded accusations of mistrust. So it's really full on when you break it down.
This is going from the innocuous down, sort of scaling up to becoming really, each step, once you become used to it and you accept it as the abuse victim.
This is frog in the fry pan, isn't it?
Frog in the fry pan, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And if anyone missed that episode when we described what a frog in a fry pan was, it was when you put a frog in the fry pan and what was it again? Turn up the heat slightly and
you turn the heat up very, very incrementally.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. It's just disgusting. The heat is turned up so incrementally that you don't realize, yeah, you're cooking the goose or cooking the frog. It's funny. I've got this meditation that I do from Abraham. And anyone who doesn't remember me talking about crazy Abraham, it's this group of entities that talk through this woman.
That's
and
right.
It sounds absolutely mental. And we talked about it in the Law of Attraction. I have this meditation. You're meant to listen to, there are 4 of them. One is for general well-being, one is for health, one is for financial abundance, and one is relationships. They're 15 minutes. They're super quick. You just listen to them in the morning. They're meant to like put you in the right frame of mind for the day. I didn't.
Did you do one this morning?
No, I did not. No, I did not do one.
Maybe you should.
I should do, because, yeah, it just all went wrong. There are a few things that really resonated with me, and they apply to any kind of relationship. Her name is Abraham Hicks is the group of entities, and there's value in differing opinions. And I often don't see the value in differing opinions because I don't like it when people don't agree with you. Same way as me.
Really?
Well, I don't necessarily want everyone to agree with me, but I guess I sort of align myself with people who think the same way I do. But do you not do that, or do you find...
Well, I'm married to someone who's the exact opposite of that, and he loves to differ. I mean, he'll have the opposite opinion for sport.
Okay.
Going back to what you were just saying about differing opinions. So you're saying to me that you'd prefer your friendships and your relationships to be with people who think the same way generally. And if they don't, does it surprise you?
Yes. And I've had this before. I'm always generally and genuinely surprised when I'm close friends with someone and then I find out they're very religious.
Oh, wreck off, you dag. Piss off. No, I can furry.
You're fucked.
See you next Tuesday.
Give me black dog up, yeah.
We'll just call this the patchwork, the relationship. What did you call it before?
Relationship potluck.
It's a potluck of soggy sandwiches and that kind of ham that you get out of a can and you don't know what it is. It's like, what'd you bring that for? And they just open the can and they chuck it on a plate and they go, there you go, have that.
That's what you guys get today.
Okay. So listen, let's go back a step again. Let's start again with the whole...
Abraham. Let's start with Abraham. So I'm going to actually tell you a couple of things. It starts off here. Your differences are of great advantage in the stimulation of new ideas and are important to your expansion. So I kind of agree that differing opinions actually make you think about what you want and what you don't want, what is right for you and what is not right for you. And I think that this is what Abraham means when they talk about differences are of great advantage.
I also think that if you go back to George Michael, when he had that album out, Listen Without Prejudice, we could all do with doing that, including myself. Listen to someone when they've got an opinion, put your prejudice and your preconceptions to one side, listen to what they've got to say and try and understand where they're coming from. And you might learn something, even if it is somebody whose values are the complete opposite to yours, and you know that. And you're not going to change those values because they are inherent. But if you can learn from listening to people who normally you would just write off and say, oh, they're ignorant or they're sun readers or something else nasty that you don't agree with, you know.
Yeah.
It's a skill that we need to all practice every day. Just try it a little bit with a stranger or a shop assistant or a person who you're overhearing on the bus or something. Just try it. And then gradually it becomes easier. And you do learn.
But even people that are close to you. I mean, because I can't say that I have 100% alignment with everyone that's close to me.
That's impossible.
Yeah. And one of the things in this meditation is when you understand the value of differing opinions, you will reap immediate value from every relationship. And since you cannot make others change to please you, appreciating them where they are will give you ease.
Yeah, so, I agree with that.
I find it really hard to appreciate people who do not, whose opinion is so, in my opinion, so fucking wrong or so out there. I find it really hard to appreciate them where they are. But I know that I have to because in a way, it's a mental flip of, okay, they think this way, I think this way. If I appreciate them, if I appreciate the fact that thank you for reinforcing that I don't want to think like that, that's still giving appreciation but staying true to myself. Or do you think that's not what they mean?
No, I don't think that's what they mean. I think what they mean is you can listen to their opinion, but you don't have to agree with it. You can just say something as simple as, oh, that's interesting to hear your thoughts. I don't agree. But, you know, we don't have to say it like that because it sounds like Cath Day Night. I don't agree.
Try to agree.
I don't agree with what you've just said. But, you know, it's good to listen to them. Find out why they think like that. Say, well, so what led you to that conclusion?
But I find it interesting that you would continue the conversation because I think...
You'd want to shut it down.
I shut it down. I just go, uh-huh.
But you won't learn anything from that. And they won't learn anything about you either.
Yeah, but I also don't want to learn. Like, I think I've learned over the years that when it comes to many topics, I would prefer just to nod and go, oh, okay. And either walk away or shut down the conversation by changing the subject. Because there are some things I think no matter what I say to you, you won't agree with me. And no matter what you say to me, I'm not going to agree with you. And I can't. I just don't have the energy for
No, I get that. If it's a zealot, and I have got experience of this, a zealot or someone who is completely, you know, focused on one thing and one thing only, and that's bent carpos. Not really, but you know what I mean. You have to, if you know that this is only going in one direction and it's almost like a preaching session, then shut it down, walk away. But if you're having a general chat with someone and a conversation comes up that you're enjoying, but then something happens and they say something that shocks you, takes you aback a little bit, then that shouldn't frighten you. You need to learn to sit with that, be easy with that, and just accept it. I mean, it's not your fault they think like that. It's not their fault. You know, if you don't agree, it's no one's fault. It's no one's problem. It's just, it's the rich tapestry of life.
Yes. But do you often find that people have a bone to pick? Because when I was vegan...
Well, that sort of experience, that kind of thing, you need to shut that down. If you don't agree with them and they don't agree with you, don't try and pick it out of them. Don't try and talk them out of it. Appreciate they've got their own opinion and let them have it, you know, just as you've got yours.
But I think that people love it. I mean, when I was vegan, and I haven't been vegan now for 4.5 years, but before that I was vegan for quite a long time, before it was trendy. And people had less understanding and tolerance for it. So you would say, and I did it mainly for health because I had some gut health issues, but people did not like it. And they would say, well, why are you vegan? Well, this and that. And I would say, oh, you know, I'm just vegan. Yeah, yeah, it doesn't matter. Yep. And I would just be very glib. I would try and shut it down, change the subject. People wouldn't let it go. And I just, I kept thinking to myself, why do they want to keep on and on and on, even when I'm being polite and saying, oh, yep, oh, you know, I don't really want to talk about this because, you know, it's just it's how
personal.
I am.
It's private. It's your health. I get that, Michelle, because I'm noticing that conversation happening a lot at the moment with regards to vaccination.
Oh, God.
So yes. I personally think that is not something that, it seems to be okay to just come out and ask a stranger, oh, so you've had your vaccine yet? I personally don't like the fact that you're being put on the spot. I don't like the fact that you're then being asked to explain yourself. If you give the right answer, which is yes, then fine, or you can all move on and then you can go about your day. If not, there's a can of worms opened. And that is because, going back again to what you just said about opinions differing and even your vegan thing, There's black or there's white these days. There doesn't seem to be any grey areas. Why is that? Why can't we have grey? Why can't we have the in-between? Why does it have to be bad or good, black or white? I don't get that. If you're vegan, that's your problem if you turn up to a restaurant and they don't have... No, but seriously, it's not their problem. They don't have to worry. Oh, that I can eat everything. It's just snails and you know, pig fat today on the menu. Michelle is going to go hungry. Oh, well, you know, that's not their problem. It's your choice and it's your problem. Do you see what I mean?
I do, but I also think, and certainly with restaurants, if you give a restaurant notice and say, oh...
They'll sort something out.
Well... I think they should, but equally, they can also...
Everybody's got something vegan they can whip up in their kitchen.
Well, you say that, but actually, you know, we tried to go to this really nice hotel in Italy last year, and we rang and said, oh, we'd like the tasting menu, but my partner's vegetarian. And these guys had a Michelin star. No. They said, sorry, no, we don't have that.
Oh.
So, and this was... 2 weeks in advance, weren't even prepared to do anything. So I think that in some ways I kind of respect it. I feel like, no, these are our recipes. If you don't want them, then find somewhere else to eat. But in this day and age, I feel like I could not have been the first vegetarian person to call up wanting to eat at their restaurant. Like it's a strange old thing.
Shelves getting cut. Joey had a tear. Ben Mendes loves brown lemonade. To you, that's a cold beer.
Crack open a cold one, love. Give us a tinny.
Eavesdropping.
Back to sort of relationships. I guess I really struggle with trying to find ease. And you said something, you said the word easy, and this is in the meditation a lot. It says, be easy with your life. Appreciate where you are and have eagerness for what is coming. And mm-hmm. I think about that line a lot when I'm feeling stressed out. I think, okay, be easy with my life. But it takes a mental shift to be easy with my life because I'm often not. Like even that stupid bloody freezer, I wasn't easy about that. I was annoyed.
Oh, that's annoying, yeah.
But it's hard to just think, oh, well, I guess I need to learn to do that more. And
it's your internal dialogue. You have to try and change it, although you can't change how you feel. So if you walk in, you see that your beautiful wooden floors are all warped because they've been sitting under 2 feet of water for 2 weeks and all the food's gone. That's like, oh my God, that is definitely. But then you just have to get into damage control,
get practical, mode.
Do it. Mm. Don't think about how awful this is and how upsetting it is. If you could see me this morning trying to get my children to school, you wouldn't think that this person who's talking like a Zen master about, you know, just take yourself out of yourself, just get on and do it. It's because I have to fight these fires all day, every day, it feels like. And I'm sick of screaming. I'm sick of getting upset. I'm sick of feeling sick of it.
Yeah.
So you've just got to change your narrative.
Yeah. Well,
ashwagandha helps as well. That's why I'm taking all this bloody mushroom coffee. I rattle when I walk.
I sound like I'm on Facebook all the time. I'm really not. But I do just check. I do just check it in the morning. Well, there was a nootropic supplement. It's bloody expensive. I don't think I can afford it. But it had all of these wonderful things for memory, brain fog, anxiety. Not that I have anxiety. It's more I just need to like.
Oh, I find myself getting anxious occasionally. I don't have anxiety as such, but definitely feel myself getting anxious about things occasionally. And it's silly little things as well.
Yeah.
And when that starts, you know, I want to pop a lid on that before it boils over into full on screaming.
I think that that's the thing that everybody needs to learn is to put the lid on, because I know that certainly in my life, when I've opened the door a crack to negative emotions, it gets kicked wide open immediately.
Yeah.
You know, it's so easy to just go, oh, I feel so good to feel shit. Like it.
Did I ever tell you about the time that I went to that happiness workshop that was like a 10-week course on the 10 keys to happier living? We talked about it when we did your episode about positive. What's it called?
Law of Attraction. Yeah.
I always forget what it's called, Michelle. I don't know why. I want to say positive mental action or something.
Same.
PMA. Yeah, so the Law of Attraction. I did that course, 10 Keys to Happier Living, which was the Action for Happiness group. Mm-hmm. And in one open circle, because we sit in a circle and we all open up the floor when we're talking about different things like changing your inner narrative, I just explained before. There was one time when we talked about what you just said, that opening the door to negative emotions a crack and allowing it, you know, to flood you. I said to the group something along the lines of, especially as a woman having hormones that fluctuate, sometimes in the month, I will become very negative towards myself. I will beat myself up, you know, mentally. I'll say, oh my God, you're a bad person. You look bad. You do this terribly. You're not good at this. You're not good at that. And I said, I'm sure we all do here. And they all looked at me like, oh, you poor thing. Don't beat yourself up, Geordie. And people would put their hands up and say, Geordie, there are places you can go to get help. I was like, no, you don't understand. I'm saying this because I acknowledge it. And I know you all do it too. No one put their hand up to it. I was sitting there like an asshole, completely in a silent room where they're all shaking their heads and looking very embarrassed and very upset for me, because I've confessed that I don't always treat myself the best way. That we're all in that room together because of this. Come on, people, be honest.
I think that's horrible, because there is not one single person on the planet who is so fucking zen and so trouble-free, except maybe the 9 other people in your fucking group. That's really dishonest. And I just think, why are they even in there?
Maybe they didn't understand what I was saying, but surely that resonates. When I explained that just now, did it resonate with you, Michelle? Do you have moments where you're like, I hate the way I look. I hate the way I am. I'm so stupid.
day. Every day.
I mean, it's terrible. I'm not advocating speaking to yourself like this. I often say to you, Michelle,
that's horrible.
Can you be nice to my friend, please? That's my friend you're talking about. You know, you've got to treat yourself as you would a friend. So I'm working on that. That was a way of being for many, many years. I grew up being like that. I remember being 5 or 6, maybe older, 7 or 8, maybe, looking in the mirror and absolutely hating myself. I remember saying how stupid I was to the mirror. And that's a child doing that. Where did I learn that from? My parents don't do that, so it's not from them. It's something that's within me. And I know I'm not the only person that does that, and or who has ever done it or who will ever do it. But I don't do it anymore. I've worked really hard to be positive about myself, even if I'm dropping everything all day long, like the milk gets dropped, this gets dropped, I've just smashed a crystal glass. You know, everyone has those days where you're suboptimal.
I struggle to hear that about you, because ever since I first met you, and that was many moons ago, I was still a teenager, and I didn't even know you when you were at school. This was after school, but you know, you were always the beautiful, funny girl who was super talented. And I guess you never know what's going on the inside with people, because you always project, and have always, ever since I've known you, projected, you know, life and soul of the party. And, you know, because you were always so brilliantly talented with music.
Well, thanks, Michelle.
Oh, well, that's my pleasure.
But I guess you can't have the light without the dark, can you?
No. You need the ups to appreciate the downs.
Exactly.
Well, actually, the downs to appreciate the ups. Otherwise, it's all one note. But I guess going back to the Facebook thing, you never really know unless people put on Facebook.
That fucking Facebook, bloody
no,
hell.
But it's because it's so shocking to me that...
That's the difference. I would never write anything like that on Facebook unless I had to announce something and I'd done my grieving. But no, I would never announce my inner turmoil.
It's quite confronting to read, because mostly, you know, you look at Facebook to see people, they've taken a walk in the garden, or, you know, obviously lockdown stories, it's not so great. But these super personal confessions, it seems like it's a real trend. I remember there was this girl, she was actually the wife, now ex-wife, of a friend of mine. And she put all of this stuff about how she'd been sexually abused, how she'd cut herself. She was now into sex work. And
oh my God, on Facebook?
On Facebook. And how, you know, she's at peace with her choices, and has anyone got any work for her? But
what, sex work?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm looking for sex work. Is anyone? Are you serious? Is she touting for business on Facebook? Surely that's not allowed.
Well, she wanted you to follow her Instagram page where they do all of that. You know, it's all code messages, and you get their handle, and then you can DM them and organize to meet up and all this kind of stuff.
I don't understand what you're saying.
Yes, but this is the thing. It's all over Facebook. And
I've not seen it.
Oh, you just don't have the right friends.
I'm not looking for the right.
Oh, how come I end up with all the depressives? But yeah,
I wonder which of my friends are sex workers.
Well, that you wouldn't even know. I'm telling you. And the thing is, they talk about it like, this is what I do.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I do sex
work. I'm not saying
work,
it's not.
But it's...
I'm just shocked that you're now like cruising for Johns on Facebook.
Well, it's on... Oh, you do it on Instagram too. Instagram is the big platform for it.
I did not know
this, because you can do closed videos.
So sheltered.
Yeah. And I guess... You know, if you've got no other way to make money, it's safer than like walking the streets. You're just cruising the net. And a lot of this is, you know, it's not IRL. It's not in real life meeting up with somebody.
So you don't end up having sex?
Well, you do virtual stuff, but you can also meet up with your clients in real life.
Do you know, I used to have a job a little bit similar to this, believe it or not. I was a porn texter. I don't mind. I was a porn texter. When I needed extra cash, I had a friend who had an interesting business, and I went to work different like shifts where you would just type and they would pay £100 per text or whatever it was at the time. And you just pretend to be whoever it was that you was. It would like the script would flash up at the top of the screen. It would say, you are Mary Lou from Portsmouth. She's 29. She works in a bar. She's got big boobs. Everything that's ever been kind of flagged is up there. And then who you're talking to will be in a different color. And you'll know that this is Ladyboy 256 or whatever it is. That's not, you know, a handle, but you'll know that this person is gay or bi or whatever they are, and they're into this, that, and the other. And you just have to have a conversation that usually consists of lots of A's. If you just press and hold the A button, or, you know, with an H at the end, or
ooh.
Yeah. So often I'd just be like listening to XFM in the background and just pressing the A and the ooh button.
Oh my God.
And then they want to meet up with you in real life, but you have to say, no, I don't want to because my husband will find out, or whatever. You know, it's just it was a little side hustle for me for a little while. And strangely, like the cooking frog, at first I was very, very shocked about the things I would read. But after a while, you just kind of get used to it and you're just firing off missives, which are quite shocking. I'm not going to say any on here because it's
But in a way, I feel like that's more pure fantasy because,
yeah,
yes, it's actually about how good you are at being able to navigate the written word. You don't physically have to show your face and you can be very disconnected from that. And
the idea was to get them to continue to send text to you because every text they send costs
money.
You know, £1.20 or whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's, no, I get that. I get that. I guess what I'm more shocked about is this idea of people talking about, and this was all in the same like massive essay this girl had written, sexually abused, end up being a sex worker at the end, basically. That was the start of the story. The end of her essay was, now I do sex work.
Well, I've never seen anything like that.
I don't know. It's because I guess this girl is quite a bit younger. So maybe it's a generational thing. I just can't imagine myself ever writing something like this because I don't know about your Facebook, but I have a lot of Facebook friends that would be like, whoa, Michelle's doing this? Like,
well, yeah. But what would you do? So obviously these people who are using Facebook as a kind of venting or therapy, what do you use? What do you do when you're feeling that bad, or you feel like no one understands you, or no one's listening to me, or I need to get this out there? What do you do?
Well, I would call a trusted friend, like actual old school voice to voice, call a trusted friend. But most of the time, I deal with it myself. I just deal with it myself.
Internally, like you don't let it out.
Not really. What do you do?
So maybe in a way, same as you. I wonder if these people are a little more evolved then, even if we hate watching their car crash unfold on Facebook, perhaps they're a little more evolved because they're able to get it out there in such a public way that they, you know, they're also getting rid of their shame and they're getting rid of any kind of stigma. They're just putting it out there. I'm sad. I'm depressed. Something awful has happened to me. I feel like this. Boom, blap, there it is. On the Facebook wall.
I don't know. I feel like part of life, part of the joy of life is forgetting. Forgetting when you felt so shit. Forgetting that you felt horrible about yourself. Forgetting whatever shame you had about something that you're not proud of. And moving on and being able to have joy. But
you never forget, Michelle. And well, if you forget, I mean, if you forget, if you think you forget, you're kidding yourself. You need to remember those things. And with that remembrance of those horrible, sad, bad times, you are able then to compare. It's like we said before about the light and the dark, the good times and the happy times that you're experiencing. You've got to know. You've got to understand. From dark, out of the dark comes the light.
See, I'm not sure if I agree. I don't want to remember all that stuff. If it's behind me, it's behind me, and I don't want to dredge stuff up, which is why I also have issues with talk therapy and people going over and over stuff they can't ever fix because it's already happened. It's in the past. It's about, for me, acceptance and move forward.
What if you can't accept it, though? Do you think maybe there are times when you think you've accepted something, you may not have accepted it, and maybe you're still making the same mistakes as a result of that? That's why people do go to therapy, because they have found themselves in a situation reminiscent of something they've been in before. That's when you've got to go deeper. And because people have, like you like said, forgotten or tried to forget about something awful that's happened to them, it's almost like it's a symptomatic, what do you call it, when you put a Band-Aid or a plaster on something, you're not actually getting to the root cause. So these problems within yourself, they're going to keep bubbling up unless you address them. You need to address them, and you need to sit with them. You need to be comfortable with them. That's a different kind of acceptance.
See, I don't think you should ignore things. I don't think you can, certainly not in the moment when all these things are happening, because we've all had bad times in life. But I also think there is nothing good that can come of revisiting all of that time and time again. I mean, I do think that situations in life keep happening until you learn the lesson. It's like, oh, why does this always happen to me? Well, because I didn't learn the lesson the first time, right? So, you know, it happens again and again and again until you make a change, and you either react differently or approach something differently. But the older I get, the more I don't care what happened in the past in many ways, because it's gone. I can't change it. And talking about it or revisiting it, it doesn't change what happened. The only thing that can change is my perspective of it.
Yeah.
And in a way, like if I, instead of trying to go back and fix something that's not fixable.
Well, it's not about fixing it, though. It's not about fixing it. And that's what talk therapies and counselling is. It's about being able to sit with it, being able to be comfortable in the negative. That's what I've been learning.
What benefit is there for that?
Oh, plenty of benefit for that. Absolutely. You don't even realise what the benefit is until you embark on that. It unlocks things. It unleashes things within you. Being comfortable with the negative is quite freeing. And you kind of don't really understand it until you started doing it.
I think in general, I don't love the negative, but I acknowledge that it exists and that it happens. But I don't want to be in it. I don't want to sit in that.
No one wants to, but you do need to be comfortable sitting in it. That's the thing. Otherwise, you might revert to some dangerous or damaging behaviours to get yourself out of it. Do you know what I mean? Like perhaps it's drink or drugs, anything to ease the pain. But you've got to be able to be comfortable with your pain, because you're going to have it. Like I said before, there's the grey area between the black and white, and everything's a journey. But, you know, I hate that. People use that expression a lot, you know, going on the journey and stuff.
But it's true.
You need to be able to be comfortable with that darkness and sit with it. It's not going to kill you, but it will make you stronger. That's what people say, isn't it?
Yeah.
It does strengthen your resolve, which will help for next time, because there's always going to be a next time. I hate to break it to you. There are going to be more sadnesses in your life and mine, and there will be hard times coming. We haven't done them all, you know?
No, of course not.
We've just got to be able to be resilient and work through them in a way that doesn't damage us.
I think it all comes down to your reaction. And this is actually something that is in this relationships meditation. And it's sometimes others believe that their happiness depends upon your response to them, but that is never true. And also, sometimes it seems like others have the power to negatively affect your experience, but that is never true. Only your response to them has the power to pinch you off from the naturally good feeling person you are.
I'm so much like this Abraham person. I think their messages are really good, and I get that. And you know what? These are things that I've been teaching myself over the last few years, because I'm a people pleaser. I'm like a little puppy dog. I need other people to be happy with me in order for me to be happy with myself. And that's wrong.
It's really wrong. And
you've got my best lesson that I've learned recently or in the last few years is RuPaul, what other people think of me is none of my goddamn business. That is my favorite line. I go to that whenever I'm feeling awkward or unsure of myself or concerned about what others think. What other people think of me is none of my goddamn business. Fucking true.
It really is.
Live by that. I thought today's episode was about friendships. So I had been busily watching a program that I thought was about friendships called The Pursuit of Love. Did you see that? It's a Nancy Mitford story. People have said to me, oh, I don't do period dramas. Neither do I, but it's one of those ones that's been kind of brought into the 21st century a little bit with great soundtrack and it feels like it could be modern. Do you know what I mean? Even though it's set with the backdrop of World War II.
What was it called?
And it's The Pursuit of Love. It was written and directed by Emily Mortimer, the actress. She's really good.
I have watched
this. She brings this fun thing to it. You've seen it?
I think so. It's got
with the
that
Bolter.
Gorgeous,
the mother was called the Bolter.
And Lily James is the gorgeous
Lily Collins,
lead.
Lily Gemma Collins or whatever her name is. Lily James, is it?
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
One of the Lilies.
Yes, I know. I did watch that. It was lovely.
I loved that. The friendship between the two was fantastic, wasn't it? And this Lily James Allen looking for the love that she could never find, because she was essentially a bolter, wasn't she? And her best friend, whose mother was a bolter,
yep.
meaning taking off and being with those different men. But did you notice her little man that she ended up with? Was Clem Fandango.
Oh my God, was it Clem Fandango?
That's Clem Fandango.
Because I was
Shazad
looking
Latif.
At him. I was looking at him thinking,
how do I know you?
Why is he so familiar? I have seen him. How did he go from hipster Clem Fandango? Oh my God.
To sexy wolfman in Star Trek as well. He was very attractive in that.
Oh, because this was not a pleasant role in that he was so boring and awful as the husband. That's why I did not realize it was Clem Fandango. Oh,
Clem Fandango,
my goodness.
Man.
But no, I did watch that and I did really enjoy the relationship. But I did really feel for the blonde one because she wasn't as beautiful or as free.
Also, I loved Andrew Scott. I thought he was fabulous.
Oh.
You know, the actor.
The sexy priest
who
from. Yes. Okay.
He's great. I just love watching him. He's fabulous.
Yeah.
He had the whippets.
He was good.
It was good. It was a good one. It reminded me. My takeaway was it reminded me of something I saw back in the 80s or 90s. The 80s. Unbearable Lightness of Being. It's not the same, but it was similar because it was also set to a backdrop of war where everybody was kind of feeling like, oh, this is it. We're all going to die anyway. We may as well just have an absolute blast. Mm-hmm. It's all over. But Unbearable Lightness of Being had Daniel Day-Lewis and Juliette Binoche. Did you see that?
Yes, and she had the bowler hat and she wore a men's shirt. And after that, I always wanted to be naked and just have an oversized men's shirt. That was my go-to.
I don't remember that. But the other thing I watched in preparation for this conversation today was the Friends reunion. Did you see that?
I was never a Friends fan.
Well, you weren't. Oh, I loved Friends.
No, I never really watched it.
I thought it was great.
No, I never really watched it. I was more Seinfeld. Loved Seinfeld.
Okay.
And I loved the friendship between that group in Seinfeld.
Uh-huh. Well, I was very interested to learn mm-hmm. that, you know, the big deal in Friends was that Ross and Rachel had on again, off again relationship, which they started out loving each other, but both had relationships and eventually they both were free to be together and then they messed it up and then they kind of kept coming and going between like the entire series, coming together, then breaking up. And in the end, I think they did get together. But it turns out the big shocker was that they did actually have a relationship. What, they had feelings for each other in the beginning. So they were both in relationships at different times, but both also fancying the pants off each other as well.
In real life or in
that
the show?
In real IRL, as you said before, in real life. But listen, one last takeaway that I had from the Friends reunion was Joey Tribbiani, who was the sexy, how you doing? How you doing? Joey Tribbiani, he's now what they're calling on Twitter, Irish Dar. He's an Irish da. He's got this striped shirt. He's leaning back with his big gut and a little smile on his face, twinkle in his eye. And there's hundreds and hundreds of memes and quotes from Irish people saying, "Didn't he just look like your da? Didn't he look like your uncle?" They'd have little things like, "Come here to me. What is it you're studying now?" "Oh, law. Right, right. Very good, very good. Ah, Jesus, sure. I'll know who to ring when I get myself into a bit of trouble." That kind of thing. "Oh, what is it you're studying? What are you going to do with that arts degree?"
Oh, my God. The Irish da. Oh.
Yeah, you're da.
So he's to let himself go.
Yes, but in a lovely way. In a way that you just think, oh, isn't he lovely?
But this is what we need more of, because I do find it shocking when you see all the before and after plastic surgery with all the ladies. Because the men don't feel any, well, some.
It's distracting.
Some men don't feel any such need. Yeah. Although I think Tom Cruise has had a bit also, speaking
of. Probably.
Yes, I don't know. But some men do. Some men do want that. I mean, I remember seeing, Mickey Rourke. Have I talked about this story
before? Oh, my God. What happened to his face?
Well.
He was beautiful. He had an accident boxing or something, didn't he? And then he went all that. He put the proper cat mask on.
Well, I can't remember if I've talked about this on the podcast before, but when I met him, do you remember?
Did you interview him?
No. He was at one of the L events that I was at.
Oh, right.
And he was backstage and I was backstage and I met him. And from a distance, he was kind of creepy. He had like the e-cigarette, and this was before they were common, but it was an actual cigarette, so it was lit. He was smoking it and vaping, and it was just weird. And we were all like, oh, he's a bit creepy. And I'm not joking. He came within a meter of me and he had like the weird melted face thing because he's like all had the plastic surgery from years of boxing and his face was fucked. Mm. I'm not joking. He was so fucking hot. He was so fucking sexy. I really was quite surprised because I remember thinking, you look crazy, and yet you're so fucking hot. You know when people say he just had it? This guy had
it. So Mickey Rourke had it.
Even with all that weird, crazy, melty face surgery. So he just had animal magnetism in a charismatic way. Oh, it was a shock.
Wow.
It was a shock anyway. Oh, Mickey Rourke.
Do you know what? I think we've done our
dash.
We've run the race, Michelle. We've finished. We've crossed the finish line.
Oh, I didn't know we were going to get there today. But
no.
Well, thanks for the chit chat.
Well, thank you, Michelle.
Enjoy your day, and that's to everybody else too. Enjoy your day, whatever you're doing.
Just enjoy your day. Enjoy your day.
But enjoy
and don't
life.
Forget what RuPaul says.
Yes, don't forget.
What other people think of me is none of my goddamn business.
Yes, thank you, Ru. Ru, always rely on Mama Ru to get you through. Here you go.
That's right. Nice little rhyme to end the show. All right then, darling. Well, I'll see you next time. And don't forget, keep
eavesdropping. Eavesdropping.